You can't do that. Prabhupada never went at that time because he was sick, actually, in 1977, the last time he was sick. But he authorized it. And the Yugasis were there. They were, and they put the another foundation, another Ananda Dev there. And for that night, somebody come along, some thieves come along and bug it up and took away the Ananda Dev the same day, same night. Anyway, the original foundation was there, and that's where the Yogi actually ended up. And we had a lot of trouble from the West Bengal government. You can only own so much land and so much difficulty. So now where the TOVP is, the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium is now, it's a smaller space, but that's all we could do because we wanted to get the temple finished on time. Otherwise, nothing would ever get done. So that was the first thing Prabhupada did. And he was, and he laid the foundation stone. And he stayed at the festivals, he invited all of his blood brothers to come. He gave initiations at the time. He even asked these Manaji disciples to get up and speak in front of all the Prabhupada's blood brothers, sannyasis. And he was showing how, you know, his Prabhupada was establishing temple, not a mark. Gaudiya Math is like monastery, I mean, men only. Prabhupada didn't establish Mark, he established temple. Some entities were there, and it was the way Prabhupada worked, he showing how he was utilizing, because in Western countries there's not so much separation between boys and girls. So Prabhupada was showing how he was utilizing lots of entities, and they were very instrumental in preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was showing to all of his followers the different principles of Yuta Rayaka, that he was using everyone and everything in Krishna's service. And he had to stand up and speak in the presence of all of his sannyasis. Prabhupada was very bold and unique. And we had one a big poster on the side of the road. At that time, nothing was in mind for it. It was just rice, it was just flat fields. The job feet was there, Chaitanya, one or two Gaudiya Math temples were there. But practically, it was just flat, all flat rice fields. And anyway, we put a big banner on the road, big poster, and said, "Welcome, Srila Prabhupada," big Prabhupada. Huge. So when Prabhupada arrived and he saw that banner, he said, "Oh," he said, "my God brothers will like that." And they did. At least they noticed it. And so they come to see Prabhupada. I have 7 or 8 sannyasis. And they come with all their dandas and they sat with Prabhupada in the bhajan group here, and they said, they were like demanding, "We want to know why you are using Prabhupada's title. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, he has that title, and now you are using that title like you're trying to use Sophie's position or something like that." Of course, Rupa Goswami is also known as Prabhupada. But anyway, it's like a challenging aspect, and we want to know why you're using this. And for the devotees, we've never ever seen anything like this before, because the only big Prabhupada, he was there, like everything where he's. It's like God for us, we were so reverential, and but here his God brothers, they're speaking to him in demanding attitude, and of course Prabhupada told us that it's so between God brothers it's okay, we can have this attention. There may be some intimacy in different rasas. It's okay, but anyway, the devotees were getting very disturbed to hear him speaking like this. Prabhupada, you know Brahmananda? Big Brahmananda?
Yeah.
He used to be a wrestler or something like that. But he was like Bhima, you know, when Tripathi was being eroded, he was dying to jump up and grab these Prabhupada's gold rods. But Prabhupada saw that his disciples were kind of getting agitated, so he sent them all outside. "Go outside," he said, "all of you leave." So everybody left. Of course, it was just like a Jedi that, you know, split bamboo so we could see everything. And so then Srila Prabhupada, he called for his secretary, Prabhupada Prabhu, and he said, bring my stationery, my pad, you know, he had stationery pad with a letterhead on it. And he said, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami. And he said, look, this is what I'm using. He said, my disciples, they call me Prabhupada. He said, it's not wrong, actually. Disciples should give highest praise to his spiritual master. And most honorific names is like Prabhupada, Vishnu, Pada, these are very honorific names. So it's actually the duty of the disciple to use a very honorific name for his guru. He said, they are using, but this is what I'm using. Look, this is my letterhead. I'm not using Prabhupada. So the sannyasi is good. Okay, that's good. And we all become friendly and clubhouse again. At the end, very sweet, dear Prabhupada. And but now we were living with Srila Prabhupada. Like everybody, all the devotees left. There were about 70 devotees came at that time, mostly from America. Krishna consciousness was more developed in America at that time. And this great festival, everyone was surprised to see all these. The first time they'd seen such a big a gathering of Western disciples, probably the first time they'd seen like Vaishnavas from Western Vaishnavas. And it's such a big gathering and doing Harinam and Kirtan and preaching. So it's a very successful program. Then everybody left and then Prabhupada stayed some more time. There's only a handful of us, we were all living in the Bhajan group here. And at that time, there's no running water there. There's no electricity. There's no buses running either at that time. And but Prabhupada, he's completely unfazed. He still maintained his same schedule. He would get up in the middle of the night. He'd take a little rest. He'd get up in the middle of the night, and there was no electricity. We'd have kerosene lanterns. You know, the glass with the glass, the kerosene. And he told us how to maintain the kerosene lantern. Every morning you have to take the glass off and wash it and clean it. Mm-hmm. You have to trim the wick and put kerosene in the lamp. Mm-hmm. And then it's ready for the night. Because if you leave it, then night comes, you can't see what you're doing. So you do it clean, get it all prepared in every morning. And then you leave the night time, then you can light it easily and you get light. So, there was no electricity for his dictaphone, because he would dictate into a dictaphone machine, his puppy did on purples. So Prabhupada had his typewriter there, and he would put the mosquito net over his bed, and he had his typewriter, he would type with two fingers. Then he would type his Bhakti Vedanta Purport, because he couldn't use his dictaphone, his recording machine. So even in that situation, no facility, you know, he's coming from places like Los Angeles and New York, all facilities, and now he's in the middle of Raipur, but he's not fazed by it, it's exactly the same schedule. Gets up at the same time, does his translating all night, goes for his morning walk, comes back to darshan. So, because we're right on the bank of the Ganga now, as soon as you put the luggage, we used to light the kerosene lamp on the candles, and it would attract all the bugs from miles around. They would come, different bugs would come, and millions of mosquitoes would be in there, and so we would burn the cow dung, for smoke in the Mazarin. Prabhupada liked it. It made our eyes sing, but it didn't affect me. Prabhupada was really unaffected by it. And he said, my Guru Maharaj used to like his chapatis cooked on the govan. He said, it's a very nice flavor. He cooked them on the govan. And anyway, he didn't get rid of mosquitoes. I had to leave all the mosquitoes. There's so many. And he said, he would complain that sometimes, he said, these mosquitoes are very spiteful. He said, I just put my hand under my mosquito and I have to get some paper. The meat there come and bite me. So, this was one of Prabhupada's pet dislikes. One time, Guru Das Prabhu, he said, Srila Prabhupada, are there any mosquitoes in Goloka? And Prabhupada said, if they are, they're all chanting Hare Krishna. So, another pet dislike of Prabhupada, he had two pet dislikes. One was mosquitoes, and one was people who snore at night. So, Prabhupada was coming, and Prabhupada was the manager at that time, president. So he said, does anybody snore? Because Prabhupada doesn't like it. Nobody snored. So, then Prabhupada came, we were all sleeping on the veranda around. And then in the middle of the night, Prabhupada was calling Bhavananda up. Someone is snoring outside. So you find that you've already been outside snoring. Hey, wake up. You can't snore, I'm talking about Prabhupada. Now you've got to go out and sleep somewhere else. Like under the tree, that was the only place to. You have to go out and sleep under the trees. And one time, Tamil Krishna Maharaj also. He was snoring. And Srila Prabhupada said, come on. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. He said, you're snoring. He said, no, I'm not snoring. He said, yes, you're snoring. He said, no, Srila Prabhupada. When I'm sleeping, I don't snore. And Prabhupada said, if you're sleeping, how do you know you're not snoring? So these are these two pet hates, snorers and mosquitoes, and both of them come out at night. And that's the time when Prabhupada was doing his translation work. So this was his mission for his guru, his main service for his guru, to translate his books. So anything that interfered with that, that was his guru's saying. Anything that interfered with that, that was his pet dislikes. Snorers and mosquitoes. And I also had the service of Srila Prabhupada to whenever he came, well actually every time he came, he used to take the dhuna, the smoke before dhuna, in frankincense, in the pot, charcoal, and put the frankincense powder, and to make a lot of smoke and things like that. And so I would go and offer, I first I'd offer to Prabhupada's room, generally Sunday in the early evening, 6 o'clock. And in Prabhupada's room, and keep smoking, and I walk all around the building. And at that time, the Lotus building was built. So, I used to take smoke in Prabhupada's room. And I would fill it up with I would start on where his seat was, which was kind of a lot of mosquitoes like those places. So put all the smoke. I had a fan, one of the towels had a fan and to make more smoke, make frankincense very fine powder that gives more smoke. So I make a lot of smoke and probably saying, give more. And if it got very, very thick, I said, should I open the doors for windows? The system is, at least in Bengal, you put the smoke in the room, the frankincense, then you turn off the lights and open the doors and windows and switch on the fan. And then all the mosquitoes are meeting, they fly out of windows and doors. And then you can close the doors and windows. So that's generally the system. So I was saying, shall I open the window for a moment? No, keep it as it is. Keep it as it is. So he didn't do that. Prabhupada just kept the smoke there, and it would become really thick, and you'd hardly see anything. It was very, very thick, the smoke. He liked that. And so that was my daily savor to Prabhupada. Every day, when, at least when he was in my home. I would do it every day, but especially when he was there every morning. Doing his room. So, later on we had, there were some Sastrikis who were studying in Nepal, and they were studying Rig Veda, and they became attracted to Prabhupada, three of them. One actually got initiated, his name was Gangadas or Gangadas. And, this one who saved the Prabhupada and took initiation from him. Anyway, he said, can I teach you to try some non-fruitic mantras? Okay. So then he taught us the Purusha Shukta mantra. And so he said we can chant this when we take the smoke. So I would take the smoke, and he would be leading the chanting. He taught us all the Purusha Shukta mantra. Sahasra, Shirsha, Purusha. Then another devotee had a bell. Another devotee had an arsenal cup and water. So we were going around chanting the mantras and flicking water and smoke everywhere. And it became known as the Buddha Puja. About the Puja to drive away the ghost. It doesn't drive away the ghost, but someone knows it. But known as the Buddha Puja. And this Astriji, he knew how to blow a conch shell without stopping. He could continuously go, and he would blow, and then he would get air in his cheeks. And while he was blowing, then he would let that air out slowly in his cheeks while he was breathing fresh air through his nose. So he could continually, he was continually blowing. The conch was going, he didn't stop. So he came to Prabhupada's room. Generally Prabhupada would give him darshan at that time also, just before Santiyati. And come on the door, there's the bells and the smoke and the roar of conch shell is blowing and everything. We walk in, we go to Prabhupada's room, pay our obeisances, and everything stops, of course. And the conch shell is going, and Prabhupada's waiting. And he's waiting, and he's waiting, and he's looking. He realizes, you know, it's not going to stop. Buzz. He started laughing. So, the last time Srila Prabhupada was there, 1977, I went to his room and I was bringing the smoke and I paid my obeisances. Prabhupada was alone at that time. And he was chanting Hare Krishna very softly. And when he chanted on his beads, his beads would click. Someone on his beads clicked together as he did it. And he was chanting, and he had his eyes closed. And I was feeling the smoke was rising, and he opened his eyes and he looked up at me and he said, "This gives such an atmosphere of spiritual understanding." He said, "This is so nice, so nice." So then, like Prabhupada revealed, you know, that this was the whole idea. Why he liked the smoke, why he kept it in his room, it wasn't really anything to do with the mosquitoes. It was just the atmosphere. He said it creates an atmosphere of spiritual understanding. So he just appreciated the atmosphere. It wasn't really to get rid of those, you know. So in Mayapur they have kajur ras. It's from the date trees they grow, they cut the date trees and get one sap and they boil it and they make the molasses and catch your goal. You must try it if you think that's very famous. It's in the winter time. So if you go to Borkunim, then you'll probably keep thinking of it. It's the end of the season. Anyway, it's really tasty, good, molasses. And when you tap it and get that, if you leave it, if the sun comes up, it gets too warm, then it starts to ferment and it becomes alcoholic. So the devotees would go take this kajuras early morning, right before the sun rises. So anyway, the president, he wanted to stop that the world is taking this. So he, when Prabhupada came, the president gets more advantage than others, because he has more to discuss with Prabhupada, and so they get more. But so anyway, the first thing he asked Prabhupada, he says, "Srila Prabhupada, the devotees are taking this kajuras. It's a very strong intoxication problem, just like whiskey. And the devotees are drinking Prabhupada." I said, "Oh, really?" Well, Prabhupada must have known what it is because he's a Bengali. It's a great treat. Every Bengali knows it. Anyway, I go, "Oh, really? Really? They're taking this." So he didn't say anything else. So that morning, every morning we're going for darshan with Prabhupada. And then one of the devotees spoke up, his name is Vijayahari Das, from South America. He's a marine, and was Prabhupada. And he said, "Srila Prabhupada, you know, me and the boys, we take a japa walk down the road where they're making this kajura ras, and we take this kajura ras, Prabhupada. It's really, really nice. It's really tasty." But the way he said it was really funny. It's like me and the boys, we go down the bar and we have a tea time. It was funny the way he said it. And Prabhupada, "Oh, really?" So now Prabhupada, he heard the president's side and he heard the devotee's side. So Prabhupada was a good judge according to time of circumstance. So he had to settle a dispute. He knew the devotees wanted it and knew the president didn't want it. So anyway, the next day, morning, we're taking darshan, and then Srila Kirti Prabhupada, his secretary, comes in with a glass of kajura ras. And he says, "Srila Prabhupada, would you like to try the kajura ras?" Prabhupada looked at it. He said, "No, he obviously knew it, wasn't he?" And he took a little bit. "Bring me another glass, Srila Kirti." Bought him an empty glass. He poured his glass into that one. He said, "Here, pass it round. All the devotees. Take it all the drinkers." Everybody's taking it. I'm not going to sit in there. Don't get his way. Tamil was laughing. Tamil Krishna was laughing. You got to know how to catch Prabhupada, right? You didn't catch him right. Otherwise. You may have been able to get him to stop it, but anyway, Prabhupada's expert judge according to time of circumstance. Another time, Prabhupada was sitting in the Bhagavan Kutti, and there's no one else in this. Anyway, I was just sitting by his side. He was doing something. And we had the kitchen behind the bhajan kutir. It was made of, it was just a tent actually. It was just a canvas tent. And so you could hear everything. The bhajan kutir was just set by a split bamboo wall. So you could hear all the sounds coming out from the kitchen. And the devotees were there, and they had this puri press machine. It was just like two discs and a little handle on it. And you get some wider, and you go make a little ball, and you pull it down, and you get the puri, and you throw it in the oil, the ghee, or something. and it pops up. So it's like a novelty, but it has its machines and then. And then they would take the puris with khajur gul, khajur ras. The thick ras is really, really nice. Like chocolate. Really nice. So they were eating this. So Prabhupada was sitting there, and he was very afraid and concerned. And then you could hear all these voices coming. Hey, give me a puri, give me a puri. Hey, throw it over here. Give some more. Gore, give me more gore. Suddenly Prabhupada looked up and said, no. He said, they shouldn't take more than 2 puris. Not here in my airport. And then he went back to the airport. Then he was saying, hey, give me another one. Give me another one. No, no, he said, no more than 3. No more than 3 more. And then, and after he went outside, he went to the kitchen, he saw the devotees, and Jaka Maharaj was there. A few other devotees, there were Ramacharas at that time, Sridhar Maharaj, Jaka Maharaj was sent. He says something like this. This is not suitable for a sannyasi. we can't understand Prabhupada's mentality. But I was thinking of it, that his word was people say they come to see her. These are the side mark people call the other side. It's supposed to be Krishna Bhaktas and then sitting around eating puris and ghee. Or kind of an opulence. Anyway, I don't know why Prabhupada used it. He was very concerned that it was making so many puris in here. So it was during that festival, first festival 1972, that we had the small deities of Sri Sri Radha Madhava came. They were in Calcutta temple, Radha Govinda temple. And Srila Prabhupada was given 3 sets of deities when he was in Vrindavan by almost the Balmi and the Nakanda. And Prabhupada, he sent one set to Boston and one set to Berkeley. Three sets of deities from the same mold. And the other set, he kept with him. And this is when he was making his first tour of India with his Western disciples. And very successful. You've seen on that Hare Krishna film, especially when they're in Gujarat. Prabhupada being gone. Anyway, Prabhupada was making his first tour of India. And when they got to Gorakhpur, and Prabhupada was chanting this song there, Raha Mahapa Punta Bihari to these deities. And you can read this in the song, this on the song book, you read the translation of Jai Radha Mahapa's explanation is given. Prabhupada, he was chanting this song to these deities. And then he went into an internal ecstasy for some time. And then he became external again. And he said, this is such a nice song. This is a picture of Vrindavan. Jamuna is there, Govardhan, Shalimar are there, Chisora is there. This is such a nice song, a picture of Vrindavan. And we like to think from that time that we started to chant the Jai Radha Madhava before every Bhagavatam class. People would do favor of temples around the world. We'd like to think it started from that point when Prabhupada chanted to those deities. And then they became known as Radha Madhava. And when Srila Prabhupada got to Dr. Calcutta, then the tour finished there, and so the deities were staying at the Calcutta temple. And at that time we had another temple, Hindustan Buildings, Hindustan Road. And then they moved to Sri Albert Road, the present temple in Calcutta. So when the we had the first Gopurnima festival, then people brought him out from Calcutta because it's like local. The local is like 100 miles away. And at that time, we only had one or two temples in India. We hadn't really started it. Mayapur, Bombay, and Vrindavan. Even Vrindavan maybe not had the land even at that time. So there's only one, two or three centers maximum. So they brought Radha Madhava from Calcutta, and they presided over the program because they're like this size, so it's quite a good size for the program. And after the program had finished, and Prabhupada said, "Where's Radha Madhava?" And they said, "Well, they put him back in the trunk. He used to carry him in the trunk, in the steel trunk." They go back to Calcutta, and Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "Now they're here, they should stay here. They should stay in my home." And he said, "But where will they stay, Prabhupada?" He said, "Where are the devotees staying?" He said, "Well, we only have about 250, that's the only building here." He said, "Okay, they can stay there in this bamboo house, straw house. We'll be building a nice temple, but they can stay there for now." So they might want to bring the Bhajangoti. Everyone was living in the Bhajangoti for that time. And it was just a table with a cloth over it. That was it. Radha Madhava was sitting there at that time. That was, yeah, so we were, anyway, the puja was going on. In the middle of that year, somebody donated some land to Prabhupada in Hyderabad. So he wanted to start the center there. So all the devotees in India at that time, they weren't with Prabhupada through this program. And the Matajis, Matajis did a lot of deity service at that time in India. And they took Jamuna Palika, Srimati, Malati, and they said, "We're going to have Prabhupada having this program in Hyderabad. We're expecting a few thousand people, but we need some people. We only have a little Radha Gopinath in Calcutta, but nobody can see that. So Radha Madhava is a kind of nice size that everybody can see on the program. So we're going to take Radha Madhava and you can have little Radha Gopinath in Calcutta to worship in my Madhava. Nice, brand new." So, okay, so they took Radha Madhava to Hyderabad. And then Prabhupada came to attend that program, and he paid his obeisance to the deity, and he said, "Who is this deity?" He said, "It's Radha Madhava, Sri Prabhupada." He said, "From my home?" I said, "Yes, Sri Prabhupada." He said, "I told you those deities should stay in mine. Why did you bring them? And when I go back, they should stay, they should never leave." But this is sort of historical importance. Because there is some work of Jayadeva Goswami. Jayadeva Goswami also lived in Mayapur. He was the pundit for King Lakshmana Sen, who was the son of Balal Sen, that Balal Digi is still there. And Jayadeva Goswami was living, he was the pundit for Lakshmana Sen. He was living at Balal Digi, Prithupunga, on the banks of Prithupunga. And he wrote the Dashavatara Shrotas there and everything. And he wrote another thing about, he was describing how a spiritual city is going to become manifested. And then he said that there will be deities, Radha Krishna deities will be put on the center of that city. And then he said the name of the deities are? Radhamadhavi. So like, Jayadeva was a few hundred years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So before the prediction, the Mahaprabhu, before his event in Mayapur Dhamma, before the whole prediction of his mission going on all over the world, and the spiritual city that Mahaprabhu was set and desired, Prabhupada desired. This was a few hundred years before all of that, Jayadeva was from. But he must have had that vision also. He was talking of the spiritual city and the deities would be Sri Radha Madhava. So this is how the vision of the Acharyas, we think, you know, more in terms of practicality, you know, Radha Madhava happened to be there, the Prabhupada in Vrindavan, he was touring with them. He happened to chant there, other Manavas, he could be a distant. Just by chance, he said, you know, they were local deities in Calcutta, so they came. Obviously, it was very practical. Prabhupada just wanted to say that they all have great significance. So the Acharyas, they understand that. The vision of the Acharyas, they see into the future. They see the temple, they see the city, and they see the deities of Sri Sri Ramananda. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has also seen him. Everybody knows he's written himself how he has seen this, what he described as a mansion. And he was in Navadvipa, because Michael was lost at that time, you know. The Gandhar was flooding and everything was lost, and everybody left and they went to Highland, which was Navadvipa town. And So like everything was lost. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was there in Navadvipa, and he was looking across the river in the eastern direction to where the third place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. And he described that he saw a great building like a mansion. And the lights you could see for miles and miles around. And one of his sons was with him, and he could also see it. And they had a servant, but the servant couldn't see it. But his son could witness. So the next morning he went over to the other side of the Gandhar, and he inquired from some local Vaishnavas, their old friend, and they said, no, this is actually the birthplace. This is, Navadvipa town is quite new, it's only about 100 years old, because everybody was leaving here because of the flooding and things. By the Lord's decided the flooding was there. That's admitted by Jiva Goswami in another Prabhupada, Nityananda Prabhu is instructing Jiva Goswami. And he said, by the desire of the Lord, the Gandhar will come and flood this whole area. After he finishes his pastimes, the Gandhar will come and flood the whole area for 100 years. And obviously people are not going to stay around and flood, so everybody leaves and go to higher land. And then for the next 300 years, it's not flooded, the Gandhar is constantly moving like a snake, twisting, and all the pastime places get lost, the birthplace gets lost. And, you know, they were claiming the birthplaces in Navadvipa. Even today they say the birthplace is in Navadvipa. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he had that vision, he heard from the Vaishnavas, he did some research work, and he got old British maps. He was a district magistrate, so he had influence. So he was reading these old maps, and he actually saw from the British maps how it was called Mirpur. Mirpur, but it was on the eastern bank of the Ganga. And there were certainly found several evidences in Shastric evidences that Gauranga was on the eastern bank of the Ganga. So then he confirmed this must be the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then to confirm it, he took Jagannath Das Bhakti Maharaj, who was the leader of the Vaishnavas at all that time, and he was about 125 years old at that time. So he couldn't see his eyelids. When he wanted to see something, he would have to lift up his eyelids. So he used to hold his eyelids safe. So he would lift up his eyelids and have a look. And his servant would carry him on a basket on his head. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him to come to Mayapur to see if he could ascertain if this was the actual birthplace. But when he arrived there, Jagannath Das, he jumped out of his basket. He was jumping up and down at 6 feet in the air. Etaini my Jagannath son, this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Etaini my Jagannath son. So he confirmed it, the greatest Vaishnava. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision. It was confirmed by Jagannath Das Bhakti Maharaj. And then they started to develop that Sridhar Mayapur. So 100 years flooding, 300 years constantly moving, and then after that, so that's 400 years after that, he said again, the task of revealing the Dharma will begin again in early by the Lord's desire. And that's like almost to the date when Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a vision, and then they started to develop Mayapur and establish the temple there. So, of course, he gave many predictions. He said it, again, all these cats will become manifested here. Gauranga cat, Madai cat, Maraparla cat, sheep cat. And many, many people will come and live here as before. Many residential buildings, you've seen many of you in your lifetime. When we went first to Maipo, there was nothing right to us. Now you go there, there's villages, there's all devotees. Gauranga Naga, Abhay Naga, Saraswati Naga. So many, they're all devotees. And he said there will be Kirtan Kayon, you will see Kirtan, they all have deities of Jagannath, Krishna, and Purnitai. This is all predicted by Nityananda Prabhu to Sukhajiva Goswami. And then he said many, many temples will appear here, and then one very astonishing temple will see him. And from that temple, Gauranga disabled Vaidika Pasha. Service to Lord Gauranga was spread all over the world. The Prabhupada describes that in Chaitanya Charitamrita 1 purple. He said periodically, we have a center in Mayapur, and periodically it is flooding in Mayapur. He said this is an indication that the flood of love of Godhead will begin here and spread all over the world. So this is the prediction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Adbhut Mandi of Vaidika Pasha. Adbhut means very astonishing, an astonishing Mandi. Arise here. So this is the instruction that Srila Prabhupada has given us, trying to execute his order and build this city and build this temple and build the city. Gauranga did you say goodbye? Adbhut. Yes, Adbhut Mandi. So Prabhupada said. This is Prabhupada's transcendental explanation of the Adbhut Mandir. You European boys and girls are used to doing something wonderful, so go to Mayapur and build a skyscraper. Translation of dialectic Adbhut Mandir or Vipikash. Prabhupada's trying to go and build a skyscraper in Mayapur. So, yeah, so this is the desires of the Acharyas. It's a desire of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants his city. He's described it. He talks of the temple from which love of Godhead, Prabhupada describes the flood of love of Godhead. Mahaprabhu said, Nitya Seva. Gauranga Nitya Seva. Where service to Lord Gauranga was spread all over the world. And of course, we know the main savior of Mahaprabhu then he's come to give his Nama Seva. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And so that spreads from here, it goes all over the world. So that's why we're making this TOD presentation on Sunday, I think. So please come to that. to make people aware of this. This is where the Yuga Dharma started, Mahaprabhu started it in my point. It spreads all over the world. So we'll be speaking more about that later. Anyway, this is the greatest desire of Prabhupada. And he wanted this temple because it's a good in the sense that, yeah, it's going to spread all, the chanting is going to spread all over the world, the elders, the lectures, aborigines, everyone, Zulus, and they're all going to take to the chanting of the holy name, that's a prediction, every town and village of the world. That's very astonishing. This is the first time like in history that outside of India, the names of Krishna, although these countries were existing before, like in the time of Parikshit Maharaj, 5,000 years ago, Europe was existing, but nobody really bothered to go there because they were more or less outside of the Varnashram system. So in India and Asia, this is where all the kings were. They were all over the world. They knew that the Europe existed, but they didn't really bother going there because they were practicing Vedic culture so much. So this is a quite an astonishing thing that the Vedic culture will spread all over the world and everybody will take to it. This is the only thing that's going to help the living entities in Kali Yuga. Harinama, 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 Kalu, Nasti, Nasti, nothing else will work. except for chanting on Hare Krishna. So, anyway, this is our mission. This is what we want to do. It's the greatest preaching project for Islam. It's going to establish Hinduism, or what we call Vaishnavism, on the map again. And Prabhupada wanted to invite scientists and leaders of the world to come and have a look, because we're presenting the dome. Prabhupada said, should he give all these details, should be a dome, very big dome, and hanging inside like a chandelier. Here you have a little chandelier. It's the universal planetary system, how the different levels of the universe are situated, beginning from Mahavishnu, the lotus growing from his navel, Lord Brahma is born, and then the different planetary systems, hellish planets, higher planets. And Prabhupada said you should also see how the day and nights are working, how eclipses take place. It should be moving also. But anyway, this is what Prabhupada wanted. So there's something for everyone there. It's going to be a real eye-opener for the world, you know. Because all the scientists are going to have to start rethinking, you know. You don't build a multi-million project on a fantasy. It's not the Disney World or anything like that. So they're going to have to start rethinking, you know, because they have absolutely no idea. You know, the universe goes on forever. It has an end. They don't know. What shape is it? They don't know. But all this information is there in the Vedic tradition. It's like a football, half full of water. Vishnu lies on that. From his breathing comes many millions of universes, not only one universe, but many millions of universes. Was it Hawking? He said that there may be multi-universes. But Vedic literature said we know that millions and millions of universes. We know that years and years ago. That's from the time of creation, the Vedas have given us information. So it's really going to establish the Vedic culture again. Apart from spreading the Yuga Dharma, it's going to be established. And they're going to have to think, religion is going to have to think. They think, here is God's creation. This is how he creates, by breathing. And here is the supreme personality of God. This is the Bodh, this is what he looks like. So it's going to be a great preaching project for me. What time do we finish? Srila Prabhupada gave the dimensions for the deities. In my book, he said that you should get Radha Madhava, and Madhava, he should be 5 feet 10 inches tall, he should be black. So Radharani should be 5 foot 8 and a half inches, she should be white. So he said, if you can make a pose similar to the small Radha Madhava, she's open. And he said that you can have Asta Shakti. Also, and the Panchatattva temple will be there. They should be made of metal and life size. So it's kind of 7 feet tall, maybe even 7 feet tall. And he said also you should make a Guru Parampara altar. And life size temple. So Prabhupada gave us all these indications and the temple and everything like that. One time in Calcutta, Jagatthakur Maharaj and Bhagavan were there, and one life member came in, Mr. Pulushan, who became maybe initiated, known as Radha Padadas. But he came to the temple, he said, I want to do some service for the temple. And so he said, okay. He said, I'd like to buy some deities for his son. So Jagatthakur Maharaj said, well, we've got this project in Mayapur, and Prabhupada told us to get these. He's just give us the sizes, you know, we can order them, then we can get them now. And then we give the guru an inspiration to build the temple more quickly. So he said, okay, you go ahead. And I'll sponsor the deities. So then I said, why do you want to sponsor the deities? And he said, well, last night I had a dream. And this one sadhu, young sadhu, came to me. And he said, you recognize me? And I said, no. He said, anyway, you gave me some money sometime. I'll come to return it. You please accept. No, no, no. If I give a sadhu money, I don't expect any to give back. And then the sadhu said, you don't recognize me. No. Then he became old. He said, oh, I know you. You're Swami Prabhupada. It was 1978. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, now I've left. He said, my disciples, they're going to experience some difficulty in the beginning. But after some time, everything will be all right. Anyway, you have some facility. You should help them, because he was a quite rich industrialist. You help them, you have some facility, you should help them. So he came to the temple and said, I want to buy some deities for Israel. So they were made in Jaipur, Jaipur, they're famous for making deities. Pandey Ola is the most famous. So he made these deities for Radha Madhava. And he said, this is very, very special deities. He was stuck like this in the shilpis when they're making the deities. He said, generally, the black marble is twice as hard as white marble, but this piece of black marble is equally as hard as black. We never had this experience before. And when I'm carving the deities, there's a constant, a beautiful ringing sound coming out all the time. We didn't hear like this before. So anyway, when they were finished, we went to collect them, and Bhavananda said, just give a final polish so they're nice and bright. So they started giving a polish, and the white spot appeared on one of them. They said, give more polish, Sri. And it got bigger. They give more, and it started to spread. Give more polish, and polish, and then the white line came all around his body like a Brahmana said. And then he polished his face, and then the tea light appeared on his head. If you go close, you can see it's going off to the side a little. You paint a new one every day, but if you go close, you can see it. And in the summertime, when you stop wearing a shirt, you can probably see that in the summer, you can see this Brahmana's head. So, and Srila Prabhupada didn't instruct us to get Lord Vishnu their deity, but he came later. We were attacked actually by dacoits, bandits. They're not like thieves. Thieves are very stealthy, but the dacoits are just come. And you get a gang and that's it. They have bombs, these handmade bombs, they're throwing bombs over, they have axes and they just break the locks off the door. So they come, thought that Srimad Radharani, she was so bright. They were thinking it must be cold. So they contacted an astrologer and he said, he made a calculation of the cold is there. Of course, these deities are made of ashtabhata, eight metals. And they just generally put a little token gold in. So there was a little token gold for the astrologer, he had the yanasur, but there's some cold is there. So they thought, you know, solid gold. So that was their target they wanted to kidnap Srimad Radharani. Anyway, they come in and they were throwing bombs and breaking the doors. You know Bhakti Raga Maharaj?
Yeah.
He lost one leg in that. They threw a bomb on his leg. So brave. And there's about 30 dacoits, I guess. Middle of 1 o'clock at night. They attacked the temple. I was inside the deity room. I are sleeping inside the building. The utmost, the other devotees in the lower building, the chakra building. Well, they scared to come, I don't blame them. They were throwing bombs all over the place. But Rabbi Raghav, he was so fearless, he was just running towards me, picking up stones and throwing stones, you know, armed men with bombs and things like that. So courageous. And they threw the bomb on his head. And then a few of them got shot. Names are being withheld because in India, in India, the foreigners are not allowed to hold guns or have gun licenses. But anyway, one foreigner whose name we won't mention, but he looks very much like him. He was a gunman, so some of them got shot. And Bhakti Raghav Maharaj, he came some years ago, and he was saying, yeah, he said, how you have to see everything as Krishna's hand in everything. And I said, Maharaj, I was thinking like that. Since you're saying that, I reveal what I was thinking. Because actually, Bhakti Raghav Maharaj, he had polio. Yeah, and he was limping on that bad leg. So, something like that, you understand from previous simple activities, you get a reaction in this life. So it's like a symbol of sin, in other words. Something happens like that, you can understand it. Simply a karmic reaction from a previous simple activity. So, so now, after this whole affair, and how we so crazy running to, you know, just to tackle all the backlights only with stones and things like that. Now that symbol of sin is gone, and now he's a hero. Everybody understands he's a hero, and now he's a sannyasi. Like the Maharaj said, now you've got three legs. You've got a good one, you've got your dandar, and you've got your crutch. You've got three legs. So anyway, I said this. Sorry, as Krishna's mercy, because Krishna says, Sarvadana Bharitya Jamami Kamacharam. If you surrender unto me, I will take away your sin. So this leg, polio leg, was like a symbol of sin. So Krishna took it away because he surrendered his life to Krishna. He sacrificed his life to Krishna. He liked it. He didn't mind. He said, yeah, that's how we see Krishna's hand in everything. And now he's a hero. He's a national hero in Bengal. And then, such a nice guy. Anyway, I went to the hearing. It was scary, I think. I was in the DVD room at the time. We had a back portion of the DVD room where we say hang back props. So I said, what should I do? I was hearing all these bombs going off and they were breaking all the doors and locks. I thought, I just light a candle and I'll sit in meditation. I thought, I don't think these kind of people would appreciate that. So I thought, I better hide. So I kind of hid behind the backdrop against the wall. My feet were sticking out the bottom and they were moving around. Somehow or another, they might have saved me. They asked me to go to the court about about 10 years ago, the case was still going on. And there was one dacoit. He was supposed to come, but he never came to the court that day because he was in another district, another court hearing for another dacoit he had done. So he didn't, but the lawyer, he said that out of those 30 dacoits, he said there's only two left. It's a dangerous game they play this. So they get the leader of the gang. His name was Ekram Sheikh, and he was He would come from Bangladesh, because we were right close to the Bangladesh border, so he would come and he was a Muslim, and there were some Muslims, some Hindus, locals, but he joined up. And then they would do their dakwah again, and they go across, just cross over the border, and they pay the police off there, and the Indian police can't go into them. That's what they were operating. Anyway, he did, Isaac Ram Shaikh, he did another dakwah again. When they're successful, they have a little champagne to celebrate their successful dakwah. So he was a little bit tipsy. He was on his bicycle going back home on the Krishnanagar High Road. And then the state bus coming, that was it. He was scraped all the way down the road. So practically all those dakwahs were dead in a few years after that. But anyway, Bhavananda Prabhu, he was present. He wasn't here at that time in India, but when he came, when he heard, and he heard about the incidents, then he had a dream that night, and he dreamed that the temple was being attacked by dakwahs, and all of a sudden, this form ghoul, the Shingadev, burst out, and he started killing all the dakwahs, and he was tearing their throats, very ferocious. Bhavananda woke up and said, well, maybe we should get a Nrsingadev protection. So he gave a description of the Nrsingadev he saw in his dream to Atmatattva Prabhu, who was from South India. So he went to Chennai to these Nrsapati, the Shilpis, who make the deities. He showed him the picture. He said, oh, this is Shtana Ugra Nrsingadev. This is the most ferocious form of the Lord. Shtana means the column. He's just burst from the column. Mm. He's super, super angry this time. And he said, yeah, this is... So he said, can you make this deity? He said, no way, I'm going to make that deity. He said, what do you want to make a deity like that for? He said there was some group, they made a Shingadev like this. And they had a gorgeous temple, they had elephant processions every day, gorgeous service. Now that place is a ghost town. Nobody lives there anymore now. Nobody worships this deity on this planet anymore. He said, you install a deity for a certain reason so you can approach him and ask for some benediction. That's the purpose of the deity. You want to ask, pray for the deity then. Whether it's material, whether it's bhakti or what, but that's the idea. You have a deity you can approach. He said, but nobody can approach this deity. Pilar couldn't approach. That's his wife couldn't approach. That's me. Nobody can approach. He's really, really angry because he's been tolerating all these tormentations of Pilar Maharaj. He's been thrown off mountains, put under the elephants, thrown in oil, given snakes. And Lord Nrsingadev is tolerating his devotees being insulted again and again. Now, Hiranyakashipu, is he in his column? Pilar looked at the column and he saw Nrsingadev, and Nrsingadev went, gave a wink. Pilar said, yeah, he's there. If he's not there, I'll kill you myself. No one else can kill you, Pilar. I'll kill you. This is the last straw. And so, yeah, so this is Nrsingadev. This is for him, this is the last straw. He's been tolerating. Now he cannot tolerate anymore. This is it. Burst from the pillar. Really, really angry. No one can approach him. So the Sabbath, he said, that we can't make this deity. He told his guru, who was the Shankacharya country for him, he said, don't make that deity. It's going to be very powerful. Becoming very powerful, don't make that deity. Then, after some time, he went to other places. Everybody refused to do it. So then he went back to the original person, please. You make a deity, he said, okay, I'll make one. Because he said, I had a dream. And my Guru Maharaj appeared in my dream, said, you can make a deity for this one. And when I woke up in the morning, the letter came through the letterbox, and it was from my Guru Maharaj, and he said, make the deity for this one, you can make it. He said, because Dorje, that deity is going to Mayapur. In Mayapur, Dorje Tanimaku was a predominant deity of Mayapur. And when the Supreme Personality of God appears and all the other forms appear with him, his devotees and associates, in different forms of the Lord, they appear with him to assist him in his pastime, and they all take on the mood of a predominating deity. So he said, here this Mayapur, this Mahaprabhu, he's Mahalakshmanaya, he's in this mood of magnanimity, he's in the mood of giving, generosity, adulterate dharma. So Lord Nishinga, he's going to take the mood of Mahaprabhu. So if you install him, you're not going to get that. He's not going to be in that ferocious mood. He's going to be in the mood of Mahaprabhu. He's going to be very merciful. So therefore, you can make the deity. So then you make the deity of Lord Nishingadev. So Lord Nishingadev is very merciful, though he looks ferocious sometimes. He's open mouth. He's very, very merciful. And he's very, very merciful, especially for the Gauranga Bhaktas and Krishna Bhaktas. Although in South India he's worshipped a lot, he has his own bhaktas, they worship Lord Nrsingadev. They go back to Nrsingaloka, to the abode of Lord Nrsingadev. And he likes that, he loves his devotees, but he loves even more the devotees of Gauranga than his own bhaktas. Because when the devotees of Gauranga, they pray to Lord Nrsingadev for protection, Lord Nrsingadev said, even I get saver. I can also participate in Mahaprabhu's sanctan mission. I can serve the devotees. So he's very happy to fulfill your desires, because our desires are generally for pure devotional service. But he likes to remove the obstacles in the path of pure bhakti. So Lord Nrsingadev really likes the Gauranga bhaktas more than his own bhaktas, because he, by serving the Gauranga bhaktas, he gets the to serve Mahaprabhu and helping his sanctan mission. So Sri Nrsingadev is the Ishtadeva of protection in ISKCON. Prabhupada said we worship Lord Nrsingadev for three purposes: to protect the Guru, to protect the movement, and protect the devotees. And why Nrsingadev? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also established Nrsingadev the Jogpit. You've seen in the book of Darshan, and then Lakshmi Nrsingha is there. They were having a lot of problems also, so then he installed Lakshmi Nrsingha, and most of their major problems stopped. And since we installed all Nrsingha, then no major problem after that. So Lord Nrsingha is in the mood of protection. Also, Nanda Baba, he has the Lord Nrsingadev in Goloka. He worships Nrsingadev. Why? To protect his son Krishna. So, Parampara, in Goloka, that's the idea of Lord Nrsingadev. He's a protective deity. So, Nanda Baba worships him to protect Krishna, so we also worship Lord Nrsingadev to protect the devotees and the mission and things like that. So Lord Nrsingadev is very much in this mood. He's very merciful. Actually, after he killed Hiranyakashipu, he came to Mayapur and stayed at the Shingapoli. The place is still there. The deity there, coming from the Satyuga also. He stayed there because he wanted to be in that special abode of his Nandavik Tham when he appears as Lord Chaitanya. So he wanted to meditate on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastime. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in the Navadvipa Baba Taranga, he's making the prakram of Navadvipa, and everything is being revealed to him, all the different personalities there on the different islands. And he goes to Nrsingapoli and he sees Lord Nrsingadev. And Lord Nrsingadev, he said, he's very pleased upon me. He places his lotus feet on my head. And we have the satari here, you can also get that sometimes. He places the lotus feet of Lord Nrsingadev on my head. And then Lord Nrsingadev gives him benediction. He says, stay here, my child, and treat them my God. Chant the holy names of Krishna, worship Radha and Krishna. And very soon, he gives him a Vaya Mudra, Vaya, fearlessness. Very soon, by the mercy of my devotees, you will attain all your perfection. So Lord Nrsingadev is in that mood of blessing devotees. And he removes the obstacles in the path of bhakti. So it's not that we can become, you know, supernatural and worship Nrsingadev, but and go back to Nishinko Loka. No, but we're taking advantage of Lord Nishinko. He's removing the obstacles in the path of our devotional service. So that very merciful Lord came. And they said, who's going to worship? They said, they asked me, who will worship? I said, I'm not worshiping. Okay, if I'm going, you worship, I'm not worshiping. Well, the Pujari is, no, we had heard all these stories, scary stories. Very, very ferocious. So then finally Kangri accepted that you think that you'll do the seva. Still, we're really apprehensive about worshipping Lord Nishinagada. And then I was sitting in front of Lord Nishinagada, just meditating. And I got some inspiration. Oh, it's you, Madhava. The same vibration. Oh, it's you, Madhava. It's just that Madhava is one of these forms. He expands into hundreds of forms. Oh, it's just you, no. And then all my anxiety goes, all the anticipation. Oh, it's just matter, it's just another form of matter, that's not good. Worshipful Lord Krishna is just expanding in different forms. Then I lost all my fear and apprehension. one devotee's name was Baba Shitty. He was so maybe he came to America.
Philadelphia.
Huh?
He came to Philadelphia.
He was serving one of the first ones to serve, to do the same. Oh, some sailors he was there. And at that time, the Brahmacharis were sleeping in the long building, on the basement in bunk beds. That was the Brahmachari ashram. So he woke up in the morning and the bed was shaking. So he woke up and the devotees getting out from Mandalati. So he opened his eyes and Lord Nishinagada was sitting on him in his bed. And he was really, really surprised. And he tried to get up and Lord Nishinagada put his hands and just, he said, it felt like the weight of the whole universe was on my body. And he had little marks there for many, many years. Maybe he's still got, I don't know. And Lord Nishinagada spoke to him and he said that, when you do my puja, you don't have to be so frightened. You should do it peacefully. You don't be in anxiety or frightened. And then he said another thing. He said, when you wake me up in the morning, you put that strong spotlight. So first you make put the little light first. Light. And after some time, then you can put the strong light. Otherwise, it gets in my eyes. And then Lord Nishinagada, he disappeared. And then Baba said he was running up and down the corridor. What's happening? He couldn't speak or anything. Then he went running to the Nishinagada temple. This was before Mangalarati. He paid his obeisances to Lord Nishinagada. Then he became kind of pacified. Then he came back to the Brahma Church. And he said, at one point, everyone was staring at me. So when I got back, I realized I was only in my coffins. Sing it up, Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Any questions so far?
Yeah, I've seen a photo where Lord Narasimhadeva is worshipped and Ganges has flooded and a pujari is worshipping, only his hand is seen and the rest of his body is seen.
Yeah, only his hand is visible, coming out of the water. we're having another class, is it tomorrow? Okay, so I can tell you more faster. I think it's probably coming someone took that photo. But the water actually came right, even it came about Lord Nishinagada said that in 2000, I think was it, the biggest flood we ever had. It came right above his head. So we had to get every room upstairs. So we would come through right around the altar. But the temple was full of water, so we had banana tree boats and put the bog offering on there, swim over to the Shingdev temple. And then he had a table on the altar, and they would put the bog on the altar and make the offering. But one time he came to them, was going to put the bog in, there was a big snake was curled up on the table. So he told him, and the snake looked at him, and he just went, and it was just the mud, it was thick ground, muddy water at that time. And the Pandukami had a doozy. He said that if you ever really want to be conscious, super conscious and focused when you're performing arati, this is how to do it. You know, there's a snake swimming around, and you can see that you can't see anything. He said, you have to, you're really fixing it. And that snake was coming in every day. It was a common legal machine that would swim around and swim out again.
In the Narasimhapalli, there was, when we went to Mayapur, some the guide was saying that in Narasimhapalli there was a small river where so they asked us to go and take some water and sprinkle in our head, and he said the significance of that river is basically Narasingha Dev washed his hands after killing Hiranyakashipu in that river. Is that
which river?
The river which is there in Narasimhapalli.
Okay, Alakananda.
Yeah, I forgot the name. So,
yeah, see Alakananda, it flows there. It's right up now, and when you see it, you can see it. That big pond there.
Yeah.
That's part of the Alakananda. When it floods, or it fills the water, you can see it. No, actually, Lord Nrisimhadev didn't wash his hands there. Somehow or another, that story. But that was in a whole belong. After he killed Hiranyakashipu, he washed his hands, and then you get those red rocks from there. So people always take those rocks, the red color, and wash them. They're padiya. There was a fashion one time, and everyone was. Prabhupada said, no, it's not exactly Vishnu Padma, but you can worship it as padiya, paraphernalia of the world. But he said, not need to worship the red rocks. Yeah, the Navadi Dhammapada described that he came there after killing Hiranyakashipu. It doesn't mention that the locally they say he washed his hands in the whole world. Then he came to another week to rest for some time. And he lived here for quite some time. But then he goes to all the little houses there. And Lord Nrisimha Dev studied there for quite some time. And he said in the future, another Dhamma house says in the future, one fortunate king will build a very gorgeous temple for Lord Nrisimha. So kings are also called Maharajas. So maybe Takamaraja is there. Anyway, we'll see. Actually, the king may have offered that. King of Krishna Naga, he's not. He's got. Maybe about 10 or 11 temples, but he wanted to give everything to Islam. He said, we approached him. He said, but he has many Devi temples which we're not really much interested in. He has the Shingapoli is one, and I think Harihara is one. It's a famous deity. Anyway, maybe later we can. We'll say we're going to build a nice temple for Islam. Any other questions? Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Jai.